From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a moment of depression and post-traumatic stress. A man who had fought on many battlefields was feeling the effects of his life at war, wanted recognition for his accomplishments, and he felt some envy when others got the attention he thought he deserved. He had lost close friends, struggled with family and relationships, and eventually decided to end his own life. His family could not stop him. That sounds all too common and all too modern, and it is. But in broad terms, that is the plot of a Greek tragedy called Ajax, written by Sophocles in the 5th century BCE. The play describes the life and fate of the warrior Ajax after the events of the Iliad and before the end of the Trojan War. So why does Ajax matter all these centuries later? Let's start with this. PTSD and thoughts of suicide have always been there for those who experience war and combat. It is a universal ongoing challenge. It is not something that should cause shame or isolation. Theater of War is a production that has now traveled for a decade with the goal of communicating to the civilian population that impact that combat has on service members who return home. Actors perform a sit-down reading with scenes telling the story of Ajax, and at the conclusion, actors leave the stage and combat veterans will come up to discuss the themes, the parallels, everything that we can learn and relate to. And tonight, Theater of War has come to Western New York and the Nazareth Arts Center at 6 p.m. Doors open 6 p.m. The show starts at 6:30, and you're going to hear why it's so compelling this hour. I want to welcome our guests who are here to tell us all about it. The guy who brought it here is Nick Stefanovich. He's vice chairman for the Veterans Outreach Center. Nick, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Zach Grenier reads the role of Ajax and is here with us in studio. Zach, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
And also here is Melissa Fitzgerald, who is an actress and former senior director of Justice for Vets and has expanded an expanded role with the Advancing Justice Initiative. And Melissa, first of all, welcome. You also read the role of?
Tecmessa. The wife of Ajax. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I want you to also just briefly tell our listeners, if you could, what Justice for Vets and what Advancing Justice Initiative is, because your work has been going on for years. This is not sort of a perfunctory role to put your name on a board. I mean, this is something that's been at the core for your work for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Nick and I actually met 4 years ago when I left my acting career to take on Justice for Vets, which we champion veterans treatment courts, which are alternatives to incarceration for veterans who return, who are struggling with the transition home, get in trouble with the law with a substance use or mental health disorder, and trauma, that they can get connected to the treatments and the benefits that they need, they deserve, and that they've earned.
All right, so we're going to have those themes work its way in many ways this hour. And listeners, I want you to know what's coming up tonight. So Nick, why don't you remind our listeners why you decided to do this, why to bring this here to Rochester, and what you want people to know about what's happening tonight.
Yeah, so, you know, I came on the board within the last year, and I have been a part of this performance. This will be my third time doing this performance. And both times that I did it, especially the first time, it changed my life. And that's coming from the perspective of a combat veteran who has struggled in the past. And it gave me new ideas and allowed me to communicate with the public that it's difficult to communicate the message of the impact of combat because it's so hard to understand if you haven't had that experience. And I saw it happen. And after I participated in it, I made up my mind to share this with as many people as I possibly could. And so when I came on the board at Veterans Outreach Center, it was the first thing I wanted to do for VOC. And throughout the last, you know, 5 or 6 months, I've been planning this event, and I've had these great connections through Melissa and Brian Dory's the producer, and we've gotten great actors to do this, like Zach. And you know, that's the other thing about Theater of War, is that it's always really well-known, really great actors that read it. My first time doing it, Martin Sheen read the lead role of Ajax. You know, today we have Zach, or tonight we have Zach reading the lead role. And, you know, this is a current actor from The Good Wife who's in shows like Deadwood. He's in the movie Fight Club. And he's agreed to come and help us do this. So how the show will go, 6:30 it'll start. The actors will read a sit-down reading of scenes from Ajax, and after that, the panel takes the stage. The panel will be myself, Brother Weez will be on the panel, Judge Jackson from Cleveland, and then Karen Heisick, who is a volunteer at Veterans Outreach Center, who lost her husband to a suicide. He was an Iraq War veteran. and we'll discuss our connections to the play. And after that is when the real show starts, and that's where Brian will turn his back on us, and he'll go out into the audience, and he'll ask the audience to talk about what they've seen, how they relate to it. It's an amazing event. It's almost a magical atmosphere.
I have to say, Nick, I have watched a number of videos of performances in other places. It is really, really moving, and I think when people first hear PTSD, stress, suicidal ideation, you know, all the issues related for combat vets, and then a play by Sophocles, you go, wait, how are we? I don't really understand the connection. Trust me when I tell you, this is just hand in glove, perfect fit. I don't know how much sort of rewriting or modernizing of language, but so much of what I see, it is not just relatable, it's probably going to stun you, just the clips I've seen. And as you say, mm-hmm. you've seen those barriers come down and people opening up to discuss. This stuff can be very hard to talk about. To me, this gives it that timeless quality that reminds us it's always been there.
Sure. And, you know, a lot of the issues that are brought up, and this is what I've been saying for the past 6 months and why this is so important, because in a charged political society that we live in today, so many of these issues become impossible for us to talk about because we fight. We take sides and we fight over these issues. Now, I've seen issues as controversial as racism in the military, the transgender ban, all of these different issues have come up in theater of war. And the atmosphere that Brian Dorries has created is one in which to this day, this will be my third performance doing this, every time it gets brought up, people learn to communicate with each other. It's a comfortable environment. Ideas get exchanged, you know, on a professional level, and everybody leaves having been changed a little bit.
Tonight, 6 o'clock. And go ahead, Zach. You're going to jump
well,
in. Well,
one of the reasons you mentioned the translation. Brian's a Greek scholar, it's his translation, and he has put it into not only the English, I think the American vernacular, which does not take away from the poetry of the piece at all. You know, when you pick up a book from the used bookstore, you're going to find Greek drama sometimes impenetrable because it was an English translation from the UK or whatever. And this is when a playwright does that, it really brings it very close, and you realize it breaks down a lot of the barriers. But also the structure of the piece, of the way what Brian has set up, is one of the reasons it works so well, I think, is because we, as actors, and the play itself, we're sort of the boiling stone. We're the thing that opens people up a bit, because we really relate to these characters, and we've thought about them, and we portray them. And it's sort of a transfer to the next segment, which is the testimonials from the group that we're working with. Nick is one of those, and three others. And then when it finally opens up, the audience, when Brian finally goes to talk to the audience and ask questions, which he does with great charisma and great intelligence and great empathy, anyone in the audience who has issues themselves, or who be they from them or a loved one, they're starting to get the sense that they can talk about these things in this room.
Yeah,
that's what happens, and it's an extraordinary thing. I've done scores of these over the past 9 years, and it's really amazing to see, because there's always a commonality in every time we do this, that there is an atmosphere in the room of openness and expectation that for the next thing that is said. And it's quite wonderful. Yeah.
You want to add to that? Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, Zach put it so beautifully, and I think the translation makes it accessible. And, you know, not only for veterans, but also for civilians, because I think these are issues that we all are dealing with. And what is really so powerful, I think, about theater is that it has been forever and currently art is the way that we share the experience of what it is to be human. And I think that a good story, artfully told, can really touch people's hearts and really change the world by changing one person. And the experience of coming to Theater of War, it's difficult to, I think, put it into words, but I encourage everybody to come because you will not walk out of there unchanged. You will be changed by that experience in a very positive way, I think.
And also, what was thought about today when we were talking earlier is the fact that PTSD is not a military term. It is something that is a human term, and if you have nothing to do with the military, and you have you are in a situation where you're exposed to some kind of PTSD, either yourself, or your loved one, or a friend, it's an educational process as well.
If you are sitting here listening, going, "This is fascinating," but I'm still having a hard time. They're going to read scenes from a play by Sophocles, and that's going to open the floodgates. I have one clip I'd like to play, and you can understand exactly how that works here. So this happens to be from a performance of Theater of War on the Soldiers and Citizens Tour from January 2012. It's been going on for essentially a decade, right? So powerful, powerful stuff here in Rochester today, but it's been traveling. This is from January 2012. The actor in this case is Juliana Frances Kelly, who's playing Tecmessa. And before we hear the clip, Melissa will explain who you're going to be hearing here. Then you're going to hear a panelist and a question from the audience, because, again, watch what happens here. The first panelist in this case is Edna Wells Handy of the Mike Handy Foundation. She's the widow of the late Michael J. Handy, a former 10-year director of the Mayor's Office of Veteran Affairs for New York City, and she and her daughter founded the Mike Handy Veterans Foundation and Fund, a nonprofit dedicated to ensuring rights, benefits, and public recognition for veterans of all eras and their families. You're going to hear her. Then you're going to hear from the audience Lieutenant Colonel Kyle J. Marsh sharing the impact that hearing this is. But who is Juliana Frances Kelly playing? Melissa, why don't you tell us who Tecmessa is?
She is playing the war-won bride of the great warrior Ajax. And I think that the role really exemplifies the struggle that families are dealing with. When a veteran returns home and is struggling, and you really, you'll probably hear it in the clip, but you really see that this is not just an issue that affects the person that's going through it, but it affects the family. And through this play, you also see how it affects the entire community. And something I think it's really important for us to remember is that the vast majority of our veterans are strengthened by their service and return home as leaders and civic assets. And everybody's path to returning home is not the same. And when a veteran struggles with the transition, it is critical that we are there for them as family members, as a community. And I think the community must be, as we were talking about earlier, the 99% of us that haven't served. We need to step up, and we need to be there. And we need to be there with programs that work for veterans and their families. And programs like what, Nick and the Veterans Outreach Center are offering are critical. And it's so exciting that you have that right here in Rochester. And I wish every community had a Veterans Outreach Center like this one.
All right, so let's listen. Here's the clip again. And first, that portrayal of Tecmessa, the war-worn wife, and then a first panelist responding, and then a question from the audience.
In the dead of night, when the lamps no longer burned, Ajax found his sword and moved to the door. Naturally, I objected. Where are you going? No messengers come calling for help. All of the soldiers are asleep. Please come back to bed. He turned to me and firmly said, "Woman, silence becomes a woman." I've heard that before, and I know what it means, so I quit asking questions. And he left without saying a word. Whatever happened then, I cannot say.
I really connected with Tecmessa. She was talking about my story. And so being in the tent in the carnage was a metaphor often for going home with the veteran, because you're also living with the carnage that he or she brings into the tent of your home at night, with the slings and arrows or literally reaching and hitting them.
I related to the guy we never saw. We never saw the Speaker of the Sun, that being of Ajax. And I thought back to my own daughter, who watched her father after 12 months of war come home, went right to work, did not reintegrate well. I don't think Ajax reintegrated well with his family. And in about 40 or 42 days, I buried 26 great Americans, and she saw her daddy do that. And although the mother thought she was shielding the son, the children see, they hear. And my daughter saw the phone, heard the phone ring every morning. And at 3 a.m, she was by my side one night and looked at me and said, "Daddy, a soldier died today." And I said, "Yes, honey, why do you think that?" I heard the phone ring. And so we had to work through a lot of the consequences of war for an unintended little girl. And so I related to the son who saw daddy as a madman and saw him come back from war.
Remarkable stuff there. And Melissa, that gets to what you're talking about there. There are so many layers. It's not just Ajax's story.
Right. It's everybody's story. And I think Sophocles actually does that so beautifully in this play, is everybody has an important voice. And I'm very excited that Zach will be reading the role of Ajax tonight. And I hope everybody comes to really experience that, because I think it's going to be powerful. Not only that, but also the conversation after. And I think that so many of us are dealing with issues. And as Zach said, like, PTSD is not strictly, it's not restricted only to members of the military. I think we as a society, as a nation, are dealing with a lot of issues and shame around those issues. And I think talking about that, which will happen tonight, really helps lift that for everybody.
And, you know, as a combat veteran myself, every time I do this, every time I hear any part of it, I relate to something different in it. And it, even listening to that clip, I get emotional, because so the first time I related to the loss of combat. The second time I did it in New York City, I related to the coming home and dealing with the guilt and sadness of what I failed to do that led to that loss. And listening to this clip recently shows me something entirely new. Now, my wife, you know, my wife, she, there has been so many times in our marriage where I have disappeared, and she doesn't know why. She can't understand it. And I try to tell her, and I can't get that communication through to her either. And it's really difficult. And so I do, like, in that clip, I'm Ajax walking out of the tent and kind of saying, "Silence becomes a woman," and saying, "Don't talk to me." That I can't explain this to you. You can't understand this. And one of the things that this event will help people with is to explain that message where I can't. You know, people absorb this and they walk out of the room, and, you know, my wife will walk out of the room saying, "For the last 5 years, I've tried to understand this concept, and I understand it more than I ever have. I've seen it happen with the people that come to it."
Wow. Zach, why don't you tell our audience, if you don't mind, more about the story of Ajax, because most people coming tonight, most people hearing in this program right now, will not be familiar right offhand. Maybe they've heard of it, but aren't intimately familiar. The story of who Ajax was.
Well, Ajax himself was called the Shield. He was not the most, he didn't have the greatest wit. He didn't have great agility in many ways. But what he and his group would do is they'd move to the front line, and they would hold down, like a defense line on a football team, they would hold down and defend those coming from behind them. And they would not have been able to succeed as much as they did without him. And so he was also very, very close to Achilles, who died, and the tradition was that he would receive his armor, Achilles' armor. But there was discussion among the generals that Odysseus came and said, "Well, you know, I think I really deserve that armor myself, and why don't we hold a contest of wits between me and Ajax and see who will win the award, the armor. And so they did, and of course Odysseus won. And Ajax was infuriated and went into a kind of madness and decided that he was going to slaughter the generals in their tents on a certain night. And he made his sword ready, he went through their tents, and as he was about to lay his first blow, Athena, the goddess of war, filled his mind with a delusion. And he wandered from the tent, and he found himself in a field full of shepherds and cattle and cows and sheep. And because of all of this pent-up rage, he let forth and slaughtered this mass of it was a massive carnage. He dragged some of the animals back to the tent and tortured them to death. When Tecmessa runs out and begs
his wife.
Yes, Tecmessa, his wife, who's witness to this, along with her boy, runs out and calls to his army, his comrades, which is the chorus in Ajax, begging them to come and help her do this. And they have an argument. They want to run away. They don't want to be any part of this, but she compels them. And in the Greek theater itself, actually, I think the stage turns or something happens where it's revealed he's sitting among the slaughter of these animals. And you can imagine 2,500 years ago, there was real slaughter on stage and him sitting on a pile of carnage, moaning and begging people to kill him. And throughout the play from there on, the arguments are for Tecmessa's argument is, please, please come back to us. And the chorus is begging him to come back. And he is suggesting, he's showing signs through page after page after page of how he wants to die. And then there's this bit of a reversal in his behavior where he basically fakes everybody out and says, you know something, you're absolutely right. Tecmessa, you're right. A good man should obey his superiors. I will swallow what I've done and I will try to be a good soldier from there on. Tecmessa leaves and he gives orders to his men that his half-brother Teucer should take care of his family. And then he takes his sword and he goes to a sandy place somewhere and buries the sword face point with its point up and tells the gods what they should do, that Helos should go to his father and tell him the Eumenides should make the lives of the generals a nightmare for what they've done. And he kills himself. Tecmessa comes back, discovers the body. The chorus comes back, and there's a lot of grief there. Teucer comes back with this horrible guilt of the fact that he wasn't there for his half-brother. And then the play, then you have the body on stage, and the body is there for the rest of the play. And it's a long play. We're not doing the whole thing, but it's a long play. And the body lies there, slaughtered, and there's an argument about whether it should be buried or not. Agamemnon comes and says this man should have no rights to be buried. And then at the very end, there's a deus ex machina, and a deus ex machina. Deus ex machina. And there is a resolution. But there is a political element to it near the end of the play. We do a very condensed version of this, but that's the story, And you know what you see, as you heard that Melissa does so well, and what you heard just now is it's not the reading of a play; it's people really going through something, because the text is so immediate and the story is so well known amongst all of us.
It seemed like everyone in the room was getting emotional just listening to that story. I suspect that's how you will feel tonight when you head out to Theater of War. Nick, why don't you remind our listeners, before we get our only break of the hour, what they need to do tonight to attend and to be a part of it?
Yeah, so you can go online right now and get tickets through veteransoutreachcenter.org, or, you know, tickets at the door. Just if I would urge everyone, I don't care what you need to do, get yourselves here. And I will make sure that people come in to see this show. My, you know, all of the proceeds from this go to help the Veterans Outreach Center. It's one of the rare times that Brian's allowed that to happen with this. And so there is that we will help the veterans in our community through this event. But more importantly is that the community members be there to experience this.
That's tonight. Doors open at 6. The show starts at 6:30. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and we'll talk about these themes. We're also going to talk about the work that everyone involved here is doing in different ways. As I mentioned, Melissa, for example, has been working on many different fronts to help veterans, and we'll talk about that work as it continues and how she sees the work over the years changing, and how are we doing with suicide prevention? How are we doing with substance abuse? How are we doing about grappling with those things in our community? So we'll talk about all of that and more with our guests when we come back. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, the Rock the Future report is out on the state of our children. We'll work through it with the people behind that report. Then in our second hour, the woman who played Maria on Sesame Street for so many years, delighting children. Well, she's coming to Rochester as a guest of the YWCA for their Empowering Women Luncheon. And we'll talk to them all about it. We'll talk to you on Monday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. What did Sophocles know to write something so prescient? And maybe like me, you'll get hung up on that for a moment, but then you realize that combat, yeah, as long as there is combat, as long as there is war, we're going to have these issues. Post-traumatic stress, family breakdown, depression, occasional envy, thoughts of failure or respect, lack of respect, everything that is the part of the complexity of what happens for combat veterans. And that's the story of Ajax and all of the people impacted by the people around Ajax, Tech Mesa, and this remarkable story. It comes to us tonight as part of Theater of War, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Nazareth Art Center. Tickets are $25. They are on sale at the Nazareth Center box office. And just remember that everything benefits the Veterans Outreach Center. And they have very accomplished people who are playing these roles, who are taking the time, coming to our community, and they are with us in studio this hour. You've been hearing Zach Grenier, who reads the role of Ajax. He is here. Melissa Fitzgerald, reading the role of Tech Mesa. She is the former Senior Director of Justice for Vets and has an expanded role with the Advancing Justice Initiative. Nick Stefanovich, the Vice Chairman for the Veterans Outreach Center in Rochester. Ajax is somebody, Zach, who, you know, as you say, wanted this recognition. He wanted the armor. He wanted that sort of, I don't know if glory comes with it or what the right terms are, but he's also the guy in our hometown who comes back home struggling to integrate, struggling to go back home and be a husband, struggling mm-hmm. to be a dad. Mm-hmm. You know, he was overcome with this idea of not only losing a friend, but also feeling like he was disrespected and he could not reintegrate. So Ajax is Ajax, but Ajax is just about everybody who comes home and struggles with that, isn't it?
And you really, there's quite often when we do this, when I've done it, you hear that echoed in the audience, that rage of the lack of recognition is something that, it's a kind of humiliation that that I think anybody can really relate to. You know, when you work very, very hard and they won't fire you in a job, say, and you finally quit and they have to replace you with three people. How many times has that happened to somebody in the audience?
Or someone else gets the promotion you thought you deserved?
Exactly. It's people want to be respected, and that's in a really well-balanced society, that's what happens. There is that recognition, but there are very few well-balanced societies, and Greece didn't have one, and we don't either.
Anywhere where you have human beings.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So far, yes.
And I do think that's an important piece of this as well, you know, beyond just sort of, you know, this story is specific to a combat veteran, but these are universal themes that I think all of us can understand and relate to, which I think is the power of not only theater, but of this program of theater of war. And I think it's a very important thing for all of us to remember because, as we've talked about, you know, most of our country never served. 99% of us have not served.
Plus, yeah.
And I think it's like 98% of us have not served. Yeah. And I think it's critical that we build a bridge. You know, there needs to be that bridge built. And I think that theater is an excellent bridge that can be built. And I think having civilians and veterans in the audience tonight will be critical to the conversation.
Nick mentioned earlier, listening to the clip we had of Tecmessa, who Melissa will read tonight, that brought something out in you when you thought about your own life. When you heard Zach describe the story of Ajax again, what is going through your mind as it relates to your own service and your own life?
Yeah, so, you know, I've related to Ajax, obviously. I see myself as Ajax. And, you know, for me, this really tells the story of the human condition, right? So throughout my deployments, what I've recognized going to the Middle East over and over again was that within human nature, there's always going to be some darkness, right? But I do believe that the vast majority of us are good. It's within our nature to be good. And unfortunately, and I truly believe until the end of humanity, that we will have to rely on the few to protect the many from those that would do us harm. And the sacrifice that's made by the few is what you see in Ajax. Because it's not within human nature to have to kill. It's not within human nature to you know, see people die and have to go through those levels of grief and guilt and sadness. And it's crippling. It crippled me. You know, I came home in 2006, and I was at that point, those 3 years, I was as crippled as somebody who had no legs. I couldn't function in society whatsoever. And the good side to our story that we don't see in Ajax, and this is why Ajax is so important, because it tells the worst case scenario. It shows the potential of what it's like if the worst situation happens, the level of grief, the level of sadness, which is why it's so important that we bring it back to the Veterans Outreach Center and to bring that into the conversation, to let the audience know and to hear from the audience how we can avoid, many times we can avoid this situation. We can reach out and we can offer the services to veterans who are struggling like Ajax is, pull them out of that misery and reintroduce them to society. And that's what makes this so significant.
I also remember a discussion at one where someone was describing during the testimonial part, someone was describing he was ready to commit suicide, and he was getting into his car and he was going to drive to the middle of the bridge and he was going to jump off. And as he was merging onto the bridge, he couldn't get in, and then someone stopped for him, which was rather unusual, and waved him in and smiled and waved. And as he moved on, he went right over the bridge, right onto the other side. And he said later that it was that one person who actually saved his life by that act of kindness. And when you're in a place, you know, suicide doesn't happen like you, I think I'll commit suicide right now because things are too tough. This takes, sometimes it takes plannings. It takes a long while sometimes to do this. And there are so many opportunities if you know the signs, and there are so many signals that people are asking, please, please, please help.
I want to also say a couple of things. I want to ask in a second, I want to ask Nick how often suicide as an issue comes up at the Veterans Outreach Center and the prevalence that we've seen. But I want to just make sure we don't lose sight of what was such an important point that Nick made, which is this. You said it's not necessarily in human nature to kill, to be this violent, to go to war. If it were, if it was just part of human nature, PTSD would be rare.
Not exist.
Yeah. You know, it would. Of course, we just sort of we would absorb it, mm-hmm. like going to the park. Mm-hmm. But we don't. It affects us in terrible, terrible ways, which is a great sign for anybody, a great evidence to use against anyone who wants to argue. This is just what humans do. Humans will always do this. We don't. We shouldn't. But I don't. I also don't discount Nick's point. I mean, we understand why mm-hmm. the few feel compelled to protect me. I understand that, but I'm appreciative of the point that you make there. It's not necessarily in our nature, and look at how it impacts us. Now, when it comes to suicide, when it comes to losing veterans as we do, unfortunately, just about every day in this country, mm-hmm. how often does it come up as an issue at the Veterans Outreach Center?
I can proudly tell you right now that as of to this date, we have never served a veteran that has come through our doors that has committed suicide. Now, if it would, I don't know, obviously no one could know the number of veterans who were at risk of committing suicide who have come to us. I can tell you from being in that darkness before I came to Veterans Outreach Center that, you know, for me, I don't remember actively wanting to commit suicide, but I do remember many times of thinking, if I don't make it through this, then I don't make it through it, and that's fine with me. And I think a lot of the veterans, who are struggling think that way. And so we go far out of our way at VOC to do everything we can. And, you know, when I talk about VOC, one of the rare things that we're able to do that larger organizations sometimes struggle to do is a veteran can come in off the street and everyone in that building, all the way up to our executive director, Laura Stradley, will be willing to sit down and personally engage with that veteran. Now, I'm not going to walk into, you know, and please don't take this that I'm saying anything negative about the VA. The VA is wonderful, and we partner with the VA and sure. a lot of the things we do. But sometimes the VA can be so large and so bureaucratic that the veteran that walks through that door, they're not going to sit down with the secretary of the VA, right? They're not. They're going to go and they're going to go to their appointment. We have the ability to make sure that nobody walks out of our doors at more risk than they could have been without our intervention. And as long as I've been there, I've never seen us tell a veteran that's something we can't do for you. Because if we can't do it inside of our building, we'll figure out how to have it done.
That's what you're raising money for tonight. $25 gets you in the door for Theater of War, which doors open at 6, and the performance starts at 6:30 at the Nazareth Art Center tonight. That's Nick Stefanovich, who's vice chairman for the Veterans Outreach Center. I want to ask Melissa Fitzgerald to tell us about her experience and what she's seeing when it comes to serving veterans in your role with Advancing Justice. You've worked as the former senior director of Justice for Vets. You have said that you see drug courts, and I scribbled some notes from one of the interviews you did about this. You know, you mentioned there's veterans treatment courts. you know, court-monitored treatment for a veteran who's come into contact with the criminal justice system as an alternative to incarceration. You mentioned more than 130 veteran treatment courts around the country.
Oh, there's way more now, which is what's so exciting.
Because I think
well over 300.
4 years ago. 300.
Over 300. So, well over 300. Hundreds more in different stages of planning and implementation. The very first veterans treatment court was started in Buffalo, New York. Rochester, New York was soon to follow. So New York has been really on the front, you know, leading the pack.
It's really taken off, obviously.
It's spreading like wildfire because they work. And, you know, veterans are getting connected. Their lives are being saved. That's how Nick and I know each other. And and one point I really wanted to make about this, and the big takeaway for me over the last 4 years, is that the veterans that come into contact with veterans treatment courts have been arrested. They have a substance use disorder and or a mental health condition or dealing with trauma. They can get treatment through the court system and through a court-monitored program. And they're 12 to 18-month programs usually, and they're strict accountability. These are definitely not a free pass, as Nick can attest to. But what I've really seen is how resilient our veterans are when they are connected to the appropriate treatments and services that, as I said earlier, that they need, that they deserve, and that they've earned. And they return after those programs and contribute so much. They are grateful for the second chance and end up being some of our most valuable community members. And, you know, I think case in point is Nick. And look at what Nick is doing in this community. He is making an enormous difference in the lives of so many, not just veterans and their families, but so many people here. And I know just personally, my life is so enriched by knowing Nick, and I can't imagine it without having Nick in it. And I think that on a larger scale, that's what programs like Veterans Treatment Courts provide and the Veterans Outreach Center. And today, in those Veterans Treatment Courts across the country, today, not cumulatively, we are serving over 15,000 veterans who would otherwise be incarcerated. They're receiving life-saving treatment every single day. And I think that we have to support programs like this. And we have to say, if we thank people for their service, let's thank them with our feet and support the programs that actually support them.
One more point on this. I remember 2003, now almost 15 years ago, when Yates County, for example, was creating, about an hour south of here, creating its own drug treatment court. And the conversation that around that, whenever you saw drug courts, maybe less so today, maybe I'm naive, but maybe less so today than 10, 15 years ago. But the question was, well, is this soft on it? In the same way,
no.
In the same way that veterans treatment courts, when you say, well, this person would be otherwise incarcerated, is this soft on it? What you're saying is we now have a growing body of evidence, whether it's a drug court, whether it's a veterans treatment court, that these alternatives to incarceration, they don't work every time, but their track record is stronger, yes?
Okay, yes. Let me just say drug courts are sort of a term that we use overall for treatment courts now, and they're over 3,000. They've been around for, I think, 30 years now. They are the most studied criminal justice model and the most successful criminal justice model in
reducing
the history.
Reducing recidivism, all kinds of things.
They save money. They reduce crime. So if you are tough on crime, you gotta support treatment courts. And, you know, I think that's very important that people miss. And it is very difficult to face your challenges. And there's strict accountability. There's frequent and random drug and alcohol testing. You show up weekly in front of the judge and the interdisciplinary trained court team. And if you know, there's sanctions and rewards. And when the whole idea is to remove obstacles to their success. And we want our community members home healthy and being able to have a job and take care of their families and pay taxes. So, you know, these courts really benefit the entire community. If you want a safer community, support treatment courts. If you want lower taxes, support treatment courts. If you want to serve the people in your community, support treatment courts. And for veterans treatment courts, if you want to say, truly want to say thank you for your service, support veterans treatment courts.
I knew you would want to say a few things.
Yeah, you know, in the end, so I worked for the treatment courts for about 3 years for Judge DeMarco and Judge Elliott. And what I saw over and over again was, when it comes to our success rates, we only consider somebody a success. We only graduate a defendant if they have a year of sobriety, they either have to have a job or be in school. So it's not like we're saying, okay, well, we tried with this person and we're just going to put them back out in society anyway. You have to accomplish what is necessary throughout the parameters of the court in order to be released from the court. So it's in reality, from the standpoint of society, it's somebody either sits in a jail cell for a year and does nothing, or somebody gets to work in redeeming themselves and becoming a contributing member of society again for that year. But there is no added threat. You know, sometimes people can get this idea that, oh my God, we're putting people back out on the streets who are going to put our community at risk, right? That's not what we're doing here. There are no murderers, rapists, or anything.
Public
like
safety
that
is still the most important thing.
Right. We're very accountable with that. And honestly, it's a non-issue. And so, from a community standpoint, just like what Melissa said, there is something in this for everybody, regardless of what you care about.
So all of this relates to how we can better serve veterans, how we can better understand the experience and reintegration. That is at the heart of what's happening tonight at Theater of War. And before we lose the hour, I want to come back to Ajax with one more question for all three of our panelists, which is this. Again, and listeners, if you're just joining us, again, the story of Ajax by Sophocles, 5th century BCE. A lot of wisdom there. I mean, 2,500 years old, but this is the story of a warrior who couldn't reintegrate, couldn't get over certain things, losing close ones to him at war, feeling like he wasn't recognized properly, feeling humiliated, feeling stress, PTSD, and then dies by suicide. You know, I don't know if Zach thinks that Ajax was the type to sit down and talk his feelings out. And I don't mean to caricature that, because I think there's tremendous value in that. And I don't want to downplay that or make it silly. But there's plenty of people today who are in that similar category who just talking is not really something that happens, you know, that you internalize feelings. Is there anything in Ajax as a character that gives you hope? Is there anything that in the people, that the stories that they share with you after they hear you perform Ajax, that gives you hope that we are able to crack this open a little bit more and to talk about it more openly before we lose more veterans?
Well, the simple fact that people do come up afterwards and thank us for this evening, and listening to people talk, saying things. In front of many, many people that they never said to anyone, including their wife or their father or their mother. It's what you need to do is to be able to find a place where you can talk. If there was some sort of understanding of Ajax's situation with his wife, if they knew what to do, if they knew what to say, they might have been able to save him. But nothing was said. Everything was a plea. Nothing was trying to get into his head, really.
Okay. Melissa, how do you feel about it?
I'm sorry, I lost the question. I was so engrossed in the answer.
Are you hearing from audiences at these performances reasons to hope that we are at least starting to open this up and allow people to get past stigma, to talk more openly, even when it seems like this is not something we address? We don't talk about PTSD. We don't talk about stress.
No question. I have seen tremendous growth, not only in the veterans community, but in the country. I think that we are really having an awareness of how important it is for us to be able to talk to one another about what we're going through and talk honestly. There are a lot of campaigns that are going on right now, and how so many people in the veteran community, in the civilian community, are dealing with mental health issues. And I think it's critical that we do talk about them. And just, you know, this is only the third time that I've been involved in Theater of War, and only the second time as an actor. The first time I brought it to a Veterans Treatment Court conference. And just watching how people opened up was really remarkable. And seeing that happen in veterans courts, and, you know, the Veterans Outreach Center works very closely with the veterans courts and here. And, you know, I think there is no question that people are starting to talk about this, and in a positive way. It is not at all hopeless. Help is out there, and people are resilient, and I don't think there is any group more resilient than the group of veterans.
About 30 seconds. Final thoughts from you on that subject.
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, this is the worst-case scenario, what people witness tonight, right? And why it's so important that they see the worst-case scenario is because we have the opportunity, after seeing that, to say, oh my God, how do we stop this? How do we prevent this? And everybody in that theater tonight is going to ask themselves that question. And we are prepared to offer solutions and help to people who ask that question.
Tonight, 6 p.m., the show starts at 6:30 at the Performing Arts Center at Nazareth College. $25 for tickets. These remarkable performers. I say, trust me, I haven't seen the full performance, but I've said, I kind of went in researching this going, how does this work together? It's amazing. It's amazing what they do. I want to thank all of you. It's our honor having you. Zach, Melissa, thank you so much. And great work as always, Nick. Thank you so much for what you do here at the Veterans Outreach Center. Our thanks to John Andrus, the engineer today, Audrey Sample, the intern, Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a nice and peaceful weekend, and we're back with you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.